This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Maiken Scott. This story is from our episode about cancer research. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Sue Scott was in her mid-30s when she was diagnosed with cervical cancer. She had chemo, she had radiation, but it wasn't working.
The cancer is like this little bug in your ear that you hear all the time if you slow your thoughts enough, that you hear your mind saying you have cancer, you have cancer, you have cancer. You're dying, you're dying, you're dying.
In 2012, her doctor had more bad news. He was pointing to all of the areas where her most recent scan showed signs of disease.
It looked like a Christmas tree, basically. There was, you know, disease everywhere. And so he said, you know, enjoy the time you have, enjoy your time at the beach, and just soak up the time with your family. And I said, well, okay, so are you recommending a treatment, though, for me? And he said, well, I mean, you know, it's not really anything to do at this point when it's body-wide.
Body-wide. Her doctor said there was no cure, nothing to be done, except...
He said, I mean, you could look into clinical trials, I guess. There might be something that would slow the growth or give you a little more time.
A little more time. Another option. Maybe to stay alive until a new treatment or breakthrough happens. Reporter Carrie Sheridan met Sue Scott and several other patients when she was following one researcher's work on immunotherapy clinical trials starting in 2013. These trials were happening at the National Institutes of Health, or NIH.
Sue Scott's cervical cancer, which had spread all over her body, had been caused by the human papillomavirus, or HPV. It's the most common sexually transmitted infection. Doctors think most of us encounter it at some point in our lives. Often it causes no symptoms, and the body clears the infection on its own. But in some cases, the infection lingers and causes cancer. These cancers often appear in the genital area, the cervix, or the head and neck. Doctors estimated Sue had less than a year to live. So she began asking around about clinical trials. Everyone, even her mom's doctor.
I asked him, you know, if he had any suggestions. He said, well, he said, I know the top guy who's doing research for HPV cancers. He said, it's Dr. Hendricks over at NIH.
Sue was able to make an appointment with that doctor, Christian Hendricks. He was leading a first-in-human cancer trial at the NIH Clinical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. Sue got into the trial, and she remembers their first conversation.
And I said, so how many people are you treating? And he said, well, we have three right now. And I said, oh, you have three patients. And he said, yeah. And I said, and how many of them are responding to the treatment? And he said, well, none yet. He said, we don't have anybody that's far enough out to know whether this has worked. And I'm thinking, this is the best option there is this guy who has three patients.
The doctor with three patients had also been a cancer patient himself, an experience that changed his career. When Christian was in his late 20s, training to become a surgeon, he noticed his vision was blurry. It turned out he had a rare eye cancer. Treatment after treatment failed, and eventually his one eye had to be removed. After that, his depth perception was off, and he realized he wouldn't be able to become a surgeon.
I spent a lot of time around when I lost the eye trying to discern what it is that I'm called to do. And it became clear to me, and it's still clear to me.
He went back to do another residency, this time in internal medicine and a fellowship in medical oncology. He's been cancer-free for many years now, but his own experience as a patient keeps him motivated to find cures.
If my cancer were to come back, it would be fatal, and I wouldn't want something that slows it down or adds weeks of survival. I'd want something that completely eliminates it, something that solves the problem and lets me go on and live my life.
Christian led cancer research trials at the NIH for more than 8 years, and the search for something that could eradicate cancer had brought him to immunotherapy. He focused on cancers caused by the human papillomavirus, or HPV, for a specific reason. The cancer has parts of a virus embedded in it.
The reason why they're so intriguing is because this particular type of cancer clearly has things about it that are not human. It has viral proteins in it.
The immune system's T cells notice this and attack. In Sue Scott's case, Christian's team isolated some of her own immune cells that had already been trying to attack her tumors. These immune cells are known as tumor-infiltrating lymphocytes, or TILs for short. They were clustered around cancer cells, punching at them, but failing to knock them out. This is how Sue describes it.
I always say that they took cells, that there were some cells in my body, some immune cells that knew that I had cancer, that had found the cancer, and they were like little kind of, you know, pocket protector wearing, little dorky, little smart, but not so brawny cells. And they had found my cancer and they're like, hey, I think you guys should get out of here. You're probably not supposed to be here. And they took those little cells that were so smart, they took them out and they sent them to Kung Fu school.
Scientists isolated those dorky immune fighters, turned on and activated them, and then multiplied them into the billions and reinjected the cells into the patients. Now there was an army of them.
They were like, hey, they were like bouncers at 1 a.m., you know, like, your time's up, gotta go.
Sue had chemo, then got an infusion of her own cells. She stayed at the NIH for weeks, laying in bed, covered with a Wonder Woman blanket, her mom often at her side. Sue's hair fell out, she battled constant nausea, and was on oxygen day and night for a while. But gradually, she started to feel better. Within a few weeks, she was well enough to walk out of the NIH and go home. A month later, scans showed her cancer had shrunk significantly. 2 months later, it was gone. The treatment worked. Another patient in Christian's trial, a married mom from Kansas named Erica Wallace, also got great results. She was also in her mid-30s, had metastatic cervical cancer, and probably had less than a year to live when she got into the clinical trial in the summer of 2012. Erica was patient number two.
They said, we can't give you any guarantees. All we can guarantee is you're going to lose your hair. And I had a wig on, and I pulled it back, and I'm like, been there, done that. That doesn't scare me.
A month after the treatment, Erica felt well enough to go home to Kansas and recuperate. She came back to the NIH for scans 4 months later.
December 19th of 2012, I went and we did scans and there was no sign of disease. They were completely clear.
Her youngest son, Marcus, was with her in the room full of doctors. He was 9 at the time.
Marcus looked up at him and said, thanks for saving my mom. And at that point, there wasn't a dry eye in the room.
There were a total of 9 women in that initial study. The other 7 didn't respond as well. Their cancers continued to grow, and they eventually died. Sue and Erica continued to do well. By 2018, they'd both reached a landmark, 5 years cancer-free. A lot of people in the medical community think 5 years without cancer means a person is cured. The trial marked the first ever cure of cervical cancer using immunotherapy. I was there at the NIH that winter, covering this milestone for my news outlet, AFP, the French news agency. Christian was there with some survivors from his previous trials. Sue, Erica, a man named Fred from another trial. They were all gathered together in a room in the basement. They talked about regaining their lives after cancer, about raising children, their careers, going fishing, how their health was. Then in walked one of Christian's latest patients, Bernie Pippin. For Bernie, this was all very new. In just a matter of months, he was making a dramatic recovery from what had been a certain death sentence, cancer throughout his body. Bernie had spent years as a businessman, building a drainage pipe company in Ohio from the ground up and growing it into a multi-million dollar enterprise. He was proud of that. Bernie raised 2 sons, now grown, with his wife of 30 years, Joan.
Bernie was always a very strongest person in the room.
He seemed really strong to me, too. He had great posture, muscular arms. He was always smiling, and he had a real firm handshake. Bernie had been diagnosed with late-stage anal cancer when he was in his late 50s, after ignoring some symptoms and warning signs. By the time he found his way to the NIH, where Christian's latest trial on HPV tumors was underway, cancer had spread to his lungs, bones, and one of his kidneys. Chemo, radiation, and another type of immunotherapy had all failed. Bernie's lungs were filled with tumors, so many that doctors weren't sure he'd meet the criteria for the study. He needed to be strong enough to withstand the treatment. Bernie was determined to get into this trial. He rode an exercise bike, posed for pictures in the gym, and later told me that he showed those pictures to Christian to convince him that he was strong enough to be in the trial. Here's Bernie in early 2018. This recording isn't great. I just had a little handheld recorder.
I said, I got two pictures I want to show you. So I showed him the screenshot of the bike, and then I showed him the shot of Joan and I. And I said, I know my pulmonary function's horrible. You've told me quite a bit it is. So I get that. And I know there's a lot of bad stuff going inside my body, and I understand that too. But I want you to know there's a lot of heart here, and I believe in the clinical trial. And I believe in what you're doing here. And when you write your book on your success stories, I want to be in your book.
In the earlier trial that cured Sue and Erica, Christian and his colleagues at the NIH had extracted one of their tumors and the immune cells that were attacking it. And then they magnified those immune cells, growing them into the billions before reinjecting those cells into the patients. This time, using just a blood sample, they were researching how a person's immune cells could be genetically engineered to recognize and target cancer. Another first-in-human trial was underway. There would be 12 patients, and Bernie was patient number 5. He was injected with 10 billion genetically engineered T cells able to recognize and target an HPV protein called E7 in his cancer cells. 2 months later, his doctors were stunned at what they saw. Bernie's tumors, more than 100 of them throughout his chest and midsection, had almost entirely disappeared.
I remember sitting in my office with Dr. Norberg and looking at these x-rays and just being nearly knocked out of my chair by all of the cancer that was gone.
Yeah, I remember sitting at the desk and opening the scans with him, and we actually thought it was a different patient because it was just so dramatically different.
Scott Norberg is an assistant research physician at the National Cancer Institute.
This is one of the first studies to show that this type of therapy can be effective in a common type of cancer, and that specifically is HPV-associated cancers.
The process of genetically engineering patients' immune cells to recognize a protein in the cancer worked for 6 of the 12 patients in the study. 3, including Bernie, had dramatic responses. Their cancer mostly went away and stayed away for up to 9 months. Bernie entered the clinical trial in July. By the fall of that same year, he was feeling good. No more coughing, far less chest pain than before, and he'd regained 12 pounds of lost muscle mass.
I mean, he had a lot of good things happening. The tumor in his kidney hadn't grown. And we thought, wow, maybe this is the cure.
But Joan says there were some lingering concerns.
So around December at a Christmas party, he noticed his tongue wasn't working correctly.
By March 2018, new tumors were found in the bones of Bernie's neck. Christian had a special rapport with Bernie and his other patients, being a survivor of cancer himself. So delivering the news that the treatment was no longer working was hard.
I mean, I really went into that treatment with Bernie and into that entire clinical trial with intent to cure people. Having to tell each one that their disease came back.
Bernie died in December 2018. This is the reality of cancer. Most times when cancer is advanced, the treatments don't work.
When it doesn't work, it's frustrating, and I take it personally. I do end up feeling even more the sense of urgency and the motivation to do better.
Christian says those losses do take a personal toll.
Of course, you become attached to each patient. I don't know if this makes me the best scientist or doctor, but I do get highly invested in each patient, and I take the outcomes personally. I've had colleagues tell me you can't take it so personally, but I do. and that's okay.
Christian and his team have spent years studying what happened, why cancer came back for patients like Bernie. They finally published a research letter describing their findings early this year in the journal Nature Medicine. They found that the treatment worked for a while because the immune cells did kill the tumors that contain those flags, those viral proteins from the human papillomavirus. They could see that and they killed them off. But then new cells grew in other places, and those cells, in a very sneaky way, had mutated to stop showing the immune system their viral proteins. The tumors disguised themselves to avoid the very targeted immune cells that had been killing them off. It's almost as if the cancer learned exactly how to hide so it could keep growing. Researchers still aren't sure if the tumors grew resistance to the genetically engineered T cells in this study, or if they'd grown more complex and difficult to treat because of earlier immunotherapies that had failed in these patients. It all made Christian wonder.
If we were able to treat these patients earlier in their disease course, when there's less opportunity for resistant tumor cells to develop, would we have a much better chance of curing them? Bernie had about 100 tumors, and that might just be a very difficult situation to cure a patient.
Understanding what worked and what didn't helps move the science forward. And although Bernie and 10 others in the trial eventually died of cancer, their participation is helping others. First, by showing that the process of injecting genetically engineered T cells was safe. And second, by showing it had some effect, it could work.
Oh my God, it did help him. It did. It gave him, I would say, at least 6 months of quality.
That's Bernie's widow, Joan.
You know what? He didn't want to die in vain. He wants them to learn. He wanted them to learn, you know, learn from it so somebody else doesn't have to go through it.
And this science is moving forward. A phase two trial on the E7 receptor targeting the viral protein in HPV cancers is already underway. Christian's also working on a trial that would test the approach in patients who are in the early stages of HPV-driven head and neck cancers. Erica and Sue are both still doing well. Sue says some parts of her daily life still revolve around cancer, but in a different way now. She says she regularly helps people find clinical trials.
Because I want other people to get to immunotherapy and have more and more people have results like I did. I also feel like the responsibility falls on me to, you know, help other people get to the place I'm where I am. So to point them toward, you know, whatever's the most aggressive and new treatment that's available.
Her doctor, Christian, would also like to see the field of research move with more urgency. He wants more people to seek out clinical trials and do it early in the course of their illness. He'd also like to see the whole field of research change, mainly to speed up. He says researchers spend a lot of time weighing safety and risk, which he understands. They need to make sure not to harm their patients with unproven new treatments.
You know, if my cancer were to come back, I would be concerned about the safety of an experimental treatment, but what I'd really be concerned about is if the treatment would work and the 100% chance of dying from the cancer. This is something that my patients say to me all the time too, and we really need to take it into account and figure out how to do faster, better cancer research.
Christian knows what every cancer patient wants. They want their cancer gone. They want another chance at life. They want progress to happen fast. For The Pulse, I'm Carrie Sheridan.
Carrie is a reporter at public radio station WUSF in Florida.